The condition of pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed without any covering, is called Vasudev. In that pure state, the Supreme Godhead, who is beyond the material senses, and who is known as Vasudev, is perceived by my mind. Purport. This text from Srimad Bhagavatam 4.3.23, spoken by Lord Shiva when he condemned Daksha, the father of Sati, as an opponent of Vishnu, confirms beyond a doubt that Lord Krishna, his name, his fame, his qualities, and everything in connection with his paraphernalia exist in the Sandini Shakti of the Lord's internal potency. So, this Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, especially in this first section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, he goes into quite some depth explaining the philosophy, the Gaudiya Siddhanta. And he describes, and you've probably heard the previous verses in which he goes to some length talking about the three aspects, or the three different aspects of the internal potency. And he identifies them as Ladini, Sandini, and Samvit. Ladini, in verse 62, says, Ladini is his aspect of bliss, Sandini of eternal existence, and Samvit of cognizance. So all three of these aspects are at work, and when the internal potency acts on a living being. And the state, the transcendental state that one has to achieve in order to fully interact with the internal potency of the Lord, is called Shuddha Sattva. We practice the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness to try to establish ourselves in goodness. And from that position, we try to come to a higher standard, which is the transcendental position. In other words, by following the four regulative principles, one situates himself in goodness. By the chanting of the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, we gradually, and we have to put the stress on the word gradual, at least for most of us, we rise to the transcendental position, Shuddha Sattva, so, or Vishuddha Sattva. So in this verse, pure goodness, it's translated sometimes as pure goodness, and at that stage it says the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed without any covering. So it's only when we achieve a higher platform of consciousness that we can actually begin to exchange loving dealings with the Lord. Our present condition means we're not qualified. We have got, just like there are clouds covering the sun, we may be aware of the sun's presence, but there are some things in between us and the Lord. So this stage at which one is actually able to perceive the Lord directly, Shuddha Sattva stage, the pure state, and therefore in that state it says that the, like Lord Chaitanya describes in the Shikshashtak, the mirror of the mind is cleansed. So when their pure condition is achieved, then the Lord may reveal himself, but it's his prerogative. So sometimes people think, well, if I just keep at this chanting long enough, it's just by my endeavor. That's sort of like the yogi's idea, that by personal endeavor, everything will be revealed. And it's true that personal endeavor is very important. But ultimately, it depends upon the mercy of the Lord. So that's actually, I often give this analogy. You know, it's just like you're at the portal or the doorway, and you're knocking on the door. So when we perform our sadhana bhakti, it's like we're knocking. We'd like to come in. But it's the Lord's prerogative when he opens that door. And it's not just a question of time. It's a question of the condition of the heart and the Lord's satisfaction. How and when he bestows his mercy, that is a mystery. And he definitely responds to sincere endeavor, but it's not that we have any power to determine when that will take place. So we have to go on sincerely endeavoring, and then the Lord may answer that knock at his door. So this verse comes from the fourth canto, third chapter, in which Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva, wants to go and visit her father, Daksha, or actually wants to visit her family members, Daksha included, and Lord Shiva advises her against it, because Daksha was very critical of Lord Shiva, especially even though he had so many opulences. Prabhupada describes that opulences can be an impediment. If a person is not pure-hearted, gaining material opulences in terms of wealth, fame, good looks, and so forth, just like we know that Krishna has six opulences, and everybody has at least maybe one or two of those, or maybe more, but certainly not to the full extent. And sometimes when people have those opulences, they become puffed up, proud. So when Lord Shiva didn't stand when Daksha entered the assembly, he became infuriated, thinking that Lord Shiva is my son-in-law and he's not showing me proper respect. And Prabhupada writes quite a lengthy section in which he explains how respect is offered. When we offer obeisances, we're actually respecting the supersoul within the heart. The supersoul is being respected. And the spiritual master, it says, when he receives the obeisances of his disciple, he is also offering his respect to the Lord. Although he may not be bowing down, but in his heart he's offering all respect to the Lord, and the Lord is the one being respected in this exchange. Not that we don't also serve and worship the Vaishnavas. We also see them as part of the Lord's paraphernalia, and they are equally worshipable and even more merciful than the Lord. But it's interesting, in this third canto, when Lord Shiva, he utters this verse explaining what his position is, and it's quite a different translation. Here we have the condition of pure goodness in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed without any covering is called Vasudeva. In that pure state, the Supreme Godhead, who is beyond the material senses and who is known as Vasudeva, is perceived by the mind. Here we have, I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudeva in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudeva, is revealed without any covering. Same meaning, of course, but it's a little bit different. Prabhupada writes a lengthy purport, but just wanted to read a little of it. He says, the living entity is constitutionally pure, asango yayayam purusha. In the Vedic literature, it is said that the soul is always pure and uncontaminated by material attachment. The identification of the body with the soul is due to misunderstanding. As soon as one is fully Krishna conscious, it is to be understood that one is in his pure original constitutional position. This state of existence is called Shuddha Sattva, which means that it is transcendental to the material qualities. Since the Shuddha Sattva existence is under the direct action of the internal potency, in this state, the activities of material consciousness stop. Now this is it's kind of a dramatic statement actually. It means that when this internal potency actually begins to act, material consciousness stops. One sees things as they are, not under the delusion of the influence of the modes of material nature, but one actually understands reality. I remember there was some sadhu years ago who wrote a attract. He called reality the beautiful, referring to Krishna. Krishna is the ultimate reality, absolute truth. So it says here, and he gives two examples. The first one we've heard, the second one is also interesting. He says, for example, when iron is put into a fire, it becomes warm. And when red hot, although it is iron, it acts like fire. Similarly, when copper is surcharged with electricity, its action as copper stops. So just like we said how material consciousness stops when the internal potency becomes active, when we come to this Shuddha-sattva stage of existence, it says, Shuddha-sattva existence is under the direct action of the internal potency. In this state, the activities of material consciousness stop. And here it says, when copper is surcharged with electricity, its action as copper stops. So it's no longer copper, in a sense. Just like that iron rod is no longer an iron rod, it's actually fire, because it has the action of fire. And just as the copper stops acting as copper but acts as electricity, when that in that surcharge condition. Prabhupada goes on to say, Bhagavad Gita also confirms that anyone who engages in unadulterated devotional service to the Lord is at once elevated to the position of pure Brahman. Mangchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Therefore, Shuddha-sattva, as described in this verse, is the transcendental position which is technically called Vasudeva. Vasudeva is also the name of the person from whom Krishna appears. This verse explains that the pure state is called Vasudeva because in that state, Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed without any covering. To execute unadulterated devotional service, therefore, one must follow the rules and regulations of devotional service without desire to gain material profit by fruitive activities or mental speculation. So, this is an important point that one has to follow and come to that position, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanabhritam, without any tinge of desire for jnana or for benefits from jnana or from karma. One has to execute devotional service steadily and with as much sincerity as one can muster. You know, years ago somebody asked Prabhupada, he was talking about sincerity, and they said, well, I'm not very sincere, how do I become more sincere? And Prabhupada just kept replying, to be sincere. It's not a magical formula. Sincerity means that you do your absolute best. And you know whether you're doing that or not. So there's no question of, there's no meter that measures, you know, your level of sincerity. Internally, there may be. So everybody knows, you know, what they're up to, what they're trying to do, what they're not trying to do. The problem is that in order to get to that position that's being described here, one has to perform austerities. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a wonderful verse that's quoted again and again by Prabhupada in his lectures. This verse, by the first verse in the fifth chapter of the fifth canto, Lord Rishabhadeva is about to go into the forest to retire from his position of being the king. And he's going to go into the forest, so he thinks, well, I better instruct my sons. They're going to be taking over the kingdom, and they need to know, you know, what is what. So this is his first instruction. Rishabha uvacha, nayang deho deha bhajang riloke, kashtan kaman arhate vidbujangye, tapo divyam putra kayena satvang, shudhyat yasmad brahma saukyam twanantam. And it means, my dear boys, Of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. It's pretty straightforward, Maharaj Shabadev. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified. And when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. So this is a very powerful verse. You know, it's sometimes we used to use the expression, you know, when they talked about people fighting, they say, now he takes his gloves off. So Shabadev Maharaj takes his gloves off right away, and he characterizes what people are up to in this material world. Generally, he says they work hard day and night simply for sense gratification. And he compares that to the activities of dogs and hogs. So it kind of puts some materialistic society in perspective. And he says that the real thing is to engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. So that's the real mission of human life. Everything else is completely secondary. This is the last great adventure. The great adventure of human life means to endeavor for self-realization. There's no other real business. Everything else is basically a sideline, a distraction. Of course, people will object and say, no, well, there has to be economic development. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. These things are very important. Well, the body has to be maintained, there's no doubt. Now, how much endeavor one wants to put into that maintenance, that depends on his good fortune, whether he's intelligent enough to realize that to reduce those things as far as humanly possible and to focus on self-realization. That's the real business of human life. There is no other business, actually. We distract ourselves with so many things, but this is the real essence. And the purport, this is probably one of the, I consider this one of the great, I mean, all of Prabhupada's purports are great, but this particular paragraph is especially nice. It says, in this verse, Lord Vrishabhadev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word deha bhak refers to anyone who accepts a material body, but the living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals, like dogs and hogs, enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. You know, people don't like such pithy descriptions. You know, it doesn't sound very glamorous. You know, when their important lives are dissected in this way. But listen to these words again. After undergoing severe hardships all day, so what is the argument? That's exactly what people do. They undergo very severe. They drive, and he actually goes on to say, listen to this, he says, at the same time they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Not human civilization. It's animal civilization, not human civilization. He says human life means voluntarily practicing suffering. Now, you know, can you just imagine, and if Prabhupada had been like the other spiritual masters that came to the West, you know, and said, oh no, you just have to meditate a few minutes every day and you become God. Now what does Prabhupada have to say? Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There's no way around it. You have to perform austerity, tapo divyam, the divine tapasya. So, I mean, in our case, it's been minimized. We're not yogis trying to perform extreme austerities, sitting in freezing water or sitting surrounded by blazing fires or anything like that. But every day we have to get up at a reasonable hour and chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. This is, we have to do these things. This is called tapodhyam. He goes on to say, there is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. So it's really inescapable. I mean, what we really like is sense gratification. In conditioned life, our attraction is mainly for the pleasure of the senses. You know, nobody, I mean, I don't know, maybe, of course, some of you are elevated, but at least personally, I still don't like to get up early in the morning. But this is required. Rising early, chanting the holy name, taking bath, even if it's not so warm. There are so many things. Following the principles of devotional life, the ninefold process, following the codices. So all these things are there. And it says, it says human beings should voluntarily accept suffering. And he doesn't say, he doesn't try to candy, you know, sugarcoat it, does he? He says suffering. It's suffering. Getting up early, taking a cold bath. Now, it may be that after some time you relish it like a fighter relishes a good fight. In fact, I remember years ago I was thinking, you know, one of the reasons I joined Krishna consciousness is so that I could, you know, enjoy a peaceful sort of state of consciousness, you know, be in a peaceful, acquire peace, you know, shanti, I want peace. So I remember asking Kirtananda Maharaj, so I've been doing this for some time now, when do I start to feel, you know, more blissful and peaceful? He said, it's always a fight, it's a struggle. He said, but after a while you'll begin to relish it. So it's a fact that if we continue to practice Krishna consciousness, there's a kind of relishing that comes in, where we actually relish it. There, in some ways, it may be, in some aspects we may not relish right away, that's true, but as time goes on, just like the analogy Prabhupada gives about sugar candy, that a person who's got jaundice or liver disease, then when they take this rock candy, sugar candy, they don't taste it as sweet. It tastes very nasty. I don't know if any of you have ever had jaundice. I hope not. But if you ever have, then that's part of the cure, that you take this rock candy and gradually it begins to taste sweet again. And that means you're on the way to a cure. So like that, these divine austerities, gradually, we begin to relish. So here, Prabhupada says, human beings, I'll just read it one more time, should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. So this is intelligence. That you go for the eternal benefit, not the temporary benefit. He says, after all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness, but as long as one is engaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of miseries. So this is another angle on it. You see, it's in one sense we say, well, you have to accept suffering. And they think, well, I don't like that idea much. But then you can't escape suffering anyway, even if you don't perform austerities. He says, as long as you're encaged, you get the focus on the language, as long as you're encaged in a material body, he says, you have to suffer different kinds of miseries. Adiyadvink, adipautik, aditaivik. So you have to suffer anyway. So why not voluntarily accept this kind of suffering and then you have eternal benefit? Whereas if you embrace the other suffering, there's no benefit. Like Pasquale's wager, you know, that if you don't know whether there's God or not, it's better to act as though there was a God. Because by acting that way, if it turns out that there is, then you're in a good position. And if it turns out there isn't, well, you haven't lost anything. And according to this, you haven't lost anything because you're going to suffer anyway. You're going to suffer no matter what. This is the good news. I remember one time Prabhupada was walking by White Rock Lake in Dallas, where all the millionaires live. And they wanted to see this millionaire, H.L. Hunt, who was an oil tycoon. They thought maybe he could be, you know, help the movement in some way. But they said, we tried to see him, Prabhupada, but he wouldn't let us in. And Prabhupada said, so, he said, if you hadn't been able to see him, what would you say? And they said, well, we would tell him about your school or about your books. And he said, no. He said, you should tell him that you're a thief. You have stolen so much, you know, from the earth. You're basically a thief. And because of this, when you die, you'll have to suffer like anything. This is the good news we have brought you. And the point was that a rich man like that, mostly he's surrounded by people who are fawning and trying to praise him and tell him how great he is, right? And that's all he really ever hears. But a sadhu coming and telling him, you know, you better get your act together. You're going to be doomed if you don't change your ways. Take up this God consciousness, this tapo divyam. Otherwise your life is without meaning. So here we have it, that you're going to be forced to suffer no matter what. You have to suffer. So why not do some kind of suffering that will actually be beneficial? It's a great proposition, actually, if you think about it, very logical. You're going to suffer one way or the other. Why not suffer in a way that is actually beneficial? Because otherwise everything else is going to be stripped away. Whatever you achieve through material endeavor, whether wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge, whatever you achieve in this life is all going to be ripped away. You go, come into the world naked and you leave naked. Nothing. You have nothing. You come with nothing, you go with nothing. But this, it says, eternal happiness. So through this divine austerity, it says one can enjoy happiness eternally. So that's actually what people are really after. They're not after suffering. They're after happiness. Anyone have a counter-argument? Is anybody after suffering? I think not. Nobody's after it. But that's what you get when you come to this world. And in an enjoying mentality, everyone really wants to enjoy, but here in this world, you're doomed to suffer. So here we have this practical proposition, perfectly practical proposition by Rishabhadev, accept this type of suffering and become eternally happy. So he says, we should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. So this theme runs throughout the Vedic literature, this theme of performing austerities in order to achieve a higher... I mean, even in an ordinary material life, you can't escape it. If you want, whatever you want, you'll have to perform us. If you want to become good at anything or achieve anything, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, you want to be a great ice skater or an acrobat or a businessman or, you know, a musician, what will you have to do? You'll have to perform austerities. If you want to become highly educated, if you want to become wealthy, famous, rich, whatever you want, you've got to perform austerities to get those things, generally. Now, some people who performed austerities in previous lives, in this life, they may be reaping the results of those. But at some point, they had to perform austerities. So whatever you want anyway, you've got to perform austerities. But this point, that if you're going to perform austerity, and you have to perform them no matter what, then these are the austerities that one should focus on. Now there's a section in the third canto. This is about Lord Brahma at the beginning of creation. He found himself sitting on a lotus. And it's sort of hard to imagine, you know, but I mean, because He found himself sitting on this giant lotus. He didn't even know what it was. He didn't know where he was or what he was. He didn't know anything. He was ignorant. So he was thinking, who am I? This is from the third canto, eighth chapter, by the way. He says, who am I that am situated on the top of this lotus? Where from has it sprouted? There must be something downwards, and that from which this lotus has grown must be within the water. So he's speculating here. I think, you know, since I'm up on a very high position and there's a long stem below me, it must be that I can find out the origin if I go down that stem. So this is what we do when we're in this material existence. We speculate. Oh, maybe it's like this. Maybe it's like that. So, acting on that speculation, it says he entered through the channel of the stem of the lotus. He entered the water, the Garbhoduck ocean. Said, but in spite of entering the stem and going nearer to the navel of Vishnu, he could not trace out the root. So Prabhupada writes, by dint of one's personal endeavor, one may go nearer to the Lord, but without the Lord's mercy, one cannot reach the ultimate point. So we were discussing this earlier, that our endeavor must be there. And we have to sincerely endeavor. But without, when the Lord, it's only possible to achieve that Shuddhasattva position, Vasudev. That's only possible by the Lord's mercy. It says, such understanding of the Lord is possible only by devotional service, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yas chasmi tatvataha. O Vidura, while searching in that way about his existence, Brahma reached his ultimate time, which is the eternal wheel in the hand of Vishnu, and which generates fear in the mind of the living entity, like the fear of death. So that Kala Chakra, that Krishna holds the chakra on his end of his hand, end of his fingers. This Kala Chakra, the wheel of time, is turning, just like it's turning for all of us at every moment, bringing us closer to the point of death. So that fear entered his heart. I'm speculating away, I'm endeavoring away, but I'm not any closer to understanding things. So he became a little afraid, a little fearful. So it describes that being unable to achieve the desired destination, he retired from such searching and came back again to the top of the lotus. Thus controlling all objectives, he concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. It describes that he heard the syllable ta-pa being vibrated. He didn't even know exactly where it was coming from. But he was being advised to perform meditational austerities, that this was on the only way he was going to understand the source of his existence, the absolute truth, that he had to perform tapasya. So, in other words, right from the very beginning of creation, because we come in that line, Brahma Sampradaya, right from the beginning of our line of spiritual masters, this is the same. This message comes again and again and again, down through the ages, Rishabhadev Maharaj, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, the whole Guru Parampara, this is their message, Tapo Divyam. So this is the business of the human life. Human life means that one has to do these things. Otherwise, there's no point. So he began to concentrate his mind. Prabhupada writes, Samadhi involves concentrating the mind upon the supreme cause of all, even if one is unaware of whether his actual nature is personal, impersonal, or localized. Concentration of the mind on the supreme is certainly a form of devotional service. To cease from personal sense endeavors and to concentrate on the supreme cause is a sign of self-surrender. And when self-surrender is present, that is a sure sign of devotional service. Each and every living entity needs to engage in devotional service if he wishes to understand the ultimate cause of his existence. And then it says at the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, Now just imagine what Brahma's 100 years was. I mean, his one day is an incalculable amount of time. It says, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge. So in other words, we shouldn't be too impatient. Hey, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for 20 years now, or 30 years, or however long it is. How come I'm not self-realized yet? Well, that's up to the Lord. You know, as I said, from our side, there has to be endeavor. From his side, his mercy is bestowed when he thinks you're worthy. So it says, as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before with the greatest endeavor. Purport, the Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service and not by one's personal endeavor and mental speculation. The age of Brahma is calculated in terms of Divya years, which are distinct from the solar years of a human being. The Divya years are calculated in Bhagavad Gita 8:17, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Maharyad Brahmano Vidhu. Brahma's one day is equal to 1,000 times the aggregate of the four yugas, calculated to be 4,300,000 years. So that's one day. On that basis, Brahma meditated for 100 years. Well, hopefully you won't have to, you know, meditate for 100 of Brahma's years to achieve this, but he could he did that though before he could understand the supreme cause of all causes. And then he wrote Brahma Samhita. So Brahma Samhita represents the mature realization of Brahma after performing his meditational austerities for 100 celestial years. Govindamadi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. This was the conclusion. He said, which is approved and recognized by Lord Chaitanya, in which he sings, Govinda Madi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. Brahmabhuta prasanatmana sochati na kankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. So, one has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before he can either render service to him or know him as he is. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't refer to our activities as sadhana bhakti. He actually referred to them as sadhana kriya, which means the activity of sadhana. There's not a whole lot of bhakti involved. Although there is bhakti in the sense that one is sincerely endeavoring, trying to please the Lord. And that sincerity is recognized, of course, by Krishna. Krishna never is not an ungrateful person. He appreciates our sincere endeavors. But the point is that there's no question of love in a contaminated condition. It described earlier that unless one comes to this Shuddha-Sattva platform, that you can't understand things as they are. You can't understand the loving exchanges between the Lord and his followers, the residents of Vrindavan and the other pure Vaishnavas. So it says here, one has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service to him or know him as he is. So, all we can do really is to keep plugging away. That's and then we wait for the mercy of the Lord to be bestowed on us. And he will certainly do that. But in his own time. You know, there's always that famous the famous joke. They say, this is a sort of a spiritual joke. He said, if you want to make the Lord laugh, tell him your plans. So, you know, we have our plan about, you know, how we're going to become great souls. But essentially, we just have to endeavor with all the sincerity we can muster. Bhagavad Prabhupada says in his prayer, with all the humility at my command. Means I may not be very humble, but whatever I can gather together. So whatever sincere endeavor you can make, it's all to your benefit anyway. None of it, and it all goes to your eternal benefit is there. Even if you make a little advancement, that's a permanent asset. It can't be... There's a famous song from the 30s where this person is singing, he says, no, they can't take that away from me. And of course it can be. What he was singing about can be taken away. But this cannot be taken away from you. Whatever you earn through your divine austerities, tapo divyam, whatever you manage to earn, whatever assets you achieve, those are permanent assets. And you pick up from that point in the next life. And in this way, we gradually come to the point of pure Krishna consciousness. So it's quite possible to do in one lifetime. Prabhupada said it again and again that it can be done. And Krishna is incalculably merciful, as are his representatives, spiritual master. But from our side, we have to practice with all the sincerity that we can command. And then we can expect Krishna's mercy. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.